Hello and welcome back to A Life Economy, dedicated to exploring the intersection of technology, spirituality, and consciousness. We're your host, Cosmo Scharf, and on today's episode, we are joined by artist, content strategist, and creative director, Hal Hefner. Welcome, Hal.
Hey, welcome.
Yeah, it's great to see you.
You too, man.
Yeah, your work is amazing and in a huge part inspired by the movie They Live.
Correct.
And, you know, for people that haven't seen this movie, the big idea is, you know, aliens disguised as humans running our society. It's a pretty interesting movie. We actually just rewatched it again yesterday. And it's definitely a bit corny, but it has some really profound ideas. And I'd love to start off by understanding and exploring what about this movie did you find so inspiring that it kind of spawned all these this massive series of art that you've been making?
Well, I think you kind of touched on it in your intro. The theory and the campiness of it is kind of what drove me to it, because it was when I actually saw it, I think I was in like fifth grade, and so that's when I originally saw They Live, and it kind of blew my mind in a way that was like, it was a joke, but it was also kind of, there was this very biting reality to it as well. So, so when I was growing up, what we would do is we would see people out in the real world and be like, just one of them. Right. And so the discussion among my friends was always around like, ah, yeah, Madonna, she's one of them. Elvis, one of them. You know, Reagan, one of them. Bill Clinton, one of them. You know, so we kept like, you know, I would always do this growing up. And then as I, you know, grew apart from some of the friends that I had grown up with, and I went to college and, you know, met new people and stuff. Here and there, I'd find people that knew the movie They Live, and I would always kind of bring it up when we were at certain places, and I'd talk about, you know, people that I thought were actually the aliens, right? The alien overlords trying to, rule us and destroy us and everything. And so then it was kind of like a running joke in my life. And so in 2015, one of my friends who has passed on, he was a brilliant, just a brilliant strategist, brilliant writer, creative guy, from New York. And he encouraged me to start making, art of it. And he's just like, do it, you know, because we were talking about it. I visited him in New York and we were talking about it. And he's like, just do it. He's like, how long would it take you? I was like, I don't know. If I stylized it, it could probably be pretty simple. So I was like, you know, looking at like propaganda art and things like that. And so I was like, all right, I'm just going to come up with this very simple color palette of like really bright, like blue and really bright red that vibrated off of each other. Because that was one of my things as an artist has always been kind of color theory. So I've always tried to make colors. I like making colors vibrate, and I like putting colors in such a juxtaposition that it makes people either like turn away, feel uncomfortable, or just like, you know, trip out. Right. So I've always been trying to make like art that has been a little bit, I don't know if weird is the right word, but I don't know. So I found that this was a good experiment for it. So I was like, let me just see what I can do. Kim Kardashian to me was the epitome of consumerism and materialism and someone that is just like, has literally, you know, like to me, it's like, stop making stupid people famous. There you go. Right. So for me, it was just like, it was a joke, right? And so I did Kim Kardashian and put it out there into the world, and it actually like took off and caught fire, and it was like my most shared piece of art ever. Yeah, so I was like, okay, I think I'm onto something here. So then I did Bill Cosby, Tom Brady, Steve Jobs, Ronald McDonald. I started to do one every week, and then they just took off. And then kind of the pinnacle of them was when I did Donald Trump. And so once I did Trump, then I had like seven of them. And so then like news outlets started picking me up. And from there, it's just kind of, you know, spiraled out of control, I guess, so to speak.
Interesting. Let's put some of this art up on the screen.
Oh, okay, cool.
This is for people to see that are watching the video or listening. You can go on our Facebook if you're not able to see it right now. But right, you know, how could you describe what we're looking at?
So this is an example of like probably some of the earliest propaganda art ever made. Uncle Sam, right? Uncle Sam is a huge propaganda piece for, you know, recruiting and all sorts of crap for the United States. And so what I did is I basically flipped it into the They Live world, juxtaposed it with, like, you know, those vibrating colors that I was talking about, mm-hmm. and just turned Uncle Sam into the evil alien overlord, you know, speaker that he really is. And so this one was kind of fun, kind of goofy. And then we kind of move into like another wonderful piece of propaganda, Baby Yoda.
Is nothing sacred, Hal?
Nothing is sacred. And you know what's funny? It's like, I do this as a joke, and a lot of people take it so seriously.
Right.
And they get like, you know, I get trolled, I get hate mail, I get everything all the time. Death threats, I've had all sorts of shit from my art. But it's like, I consume this shit too. So like, what's funny is I'm making fun of myself as much as I'm making fun of other people. I mean, yeah. some people are more like, especially politicians, I go after with a little bit more of a kind of a, you know, a knife ready for blood. But like a lot of this stuff, I'm mostly just joking with, you know, especially when it comes to celebrities, you know, it's just kind of fun. And it just kind of, you know, quote unquote, takes the piss out of things. And so,
sure. So
like, you know, so I just try to do that, and I try to have fun with it. But like a lot of people take my art more seriously than it is, you know?
Yeah. And this is something that I was curious about and wanted to ask you about, because there is sort of this blend and mix of this scathing commentary and criticism of political figures, specifically Trump and the right, as well as to some degree the left as well. You know, you feature Bernie and Clinton in some of your pieces, but then you also have this take on celebrity culture, pop culture with Rick and Morty and Ronald McDonald. And so there is this like, there's on the one hand, you have some very sort of serious and almost scary pieces where they're very intense. And on the other hand, you have sort of in the same style, the depictions of well-known cartoon characters that are, it is meant to be funny, and it is funny, but it's funny. What's interesting, how do you navigate that, like as lack of context, perhaps, that some of your audience or viewers might have, where, you know, some of these are some of these pieces meant to be taken seriously and some of them aren't, or how do you portray this when you're presenting this work?
I mean, in a way I kind of navigate it in the same sense that John Carpenter did with They Live, right? Like I try to, because like, as he's, you know, this movie, it was kind of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, ha, this is kind of a joke, right? This is not real, but you know, these people are assholes. Let's be real. So like, I'm in the same vein. That's kind of what I'm doing, right? So like, I'll go after, like, I just kind of go after what I feel needs to be gone after. And so, you know, quote unquote. So like, potentially with, you know, especially politicians, it's kind of cut and dry why I'm doing them. And then, but then when it goes into, especially like, you know, for Star Wars, right? I'm almost in a way making fun of the Star Wars fandom as much as I'm making fun of Star Wars itself. Because if you think about, like, you know, and I think that's a great fandom to talk about, because it's very toxic. There's a lot of very, you know, there's this weird thinking in fandom that if it's not my way, it's the highway, right? And so if something is not like created according to what, especially, you know, these people have in their heads, then a lot of times the fandom goes awry. They, you know, they boycott, they, you know, they disparage, they like, they chased like Kelly Marie Tran off of social media with racist crap, you know? So in a way, like a lot of my Star Wars pieces are more so making fun of the fandom than actual Star Wars itself. And so if I'm doing something like that, a lot of times I'll just put context in a post and who I'm kind of going after. And usually my, it's not my art that really sets people off. It's what I say with my art. Mm. And so a lot of people can't handle some of the stuff I say. And so,
yeah,
you know, so these ones are interesting. These reptilian ones are interesting. And so, the reason that I did this too, is this one is a little bit more kind of personal to me, because I like the alien reptilian theory is rooted in anti-Semitism and you know, hate for Jewish people. It's rooted in you know, this horrible kind of like hate for the Rothschilds and David Icke, that disgusting you know, white supremacist conspiracy theorist from England. You know, also a nut job and douchebag, has really coined this, you know, this whole reptilian thing really well. So what I wanted to do is, oftentimes the it's conspiracy theories like this come from the right wing and are used to basically promote hate towards one group or another. So what I wanted to do here is flip that narrative and project it on the right, because they're always projecting it onto the left. They're always like, oh, mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton is a reptile and drinks blood mm-hmm. of you know, the kidnapped children from Pizzagate, and she drinks their adrenochrome and all this, you know, crazy horse shit. So I wanted to flip this on them and take this, you know, kind of racist alien stereotype and slap them in the face with it.
Yeah, here's Mitch McConnell.
Yep.
Mitch yeah, McTurtle. These are quite intense images. And yeah, I'm curious about, yeah, I mean, so there's like this conspiracy theory about the whole reptilian agenda, and you commented on, is there, I mean, what's your take on this? I mean, you're drawing it, it's an idea that, you know, catches your attention.
Right.
And is it something to dismiss entirely out of hand? I'm like, I'm curious, like, where you see the connection between this art and also the movie, right? Because
this is where I kind of like, I was kind of just like a little bit, in all honesty, I was a little bit bored with the They Live imagery. So I just wanted to, and I just seen, and somebody had set me off. Like I had seen someone post about reptilians and blah, blah, blah. And I think it was like, it was kind of like the early rise of QAnon and someone. And so I was like, fuck these guys. I'm going to you know, flip it around on them and just start making all their heroes into reptiles and show, you know, cause it's like, it's so ridiculous that obviously, look, people can come off as reptilian in their thinking, cold-blooded, like, you know, lack of compassion, like our current leader right now, absolutely no empathy at all, right? And so to me, that's a reptilian thinking, right? So could that be a true way to look at people, you know, as animalistic? Sure, right? Mm. He's cold-blooded, reptilian, often does not care about anything but living and conquering, right? That's reptilian thinking. But to actually think that there are people dressed up as, you know, humans that are aliens walking around our Earth is completely insane. And and, you know, and I mean, the funny thing about it is that it's a metaphor for shitty people, right? If you really think about it, and I think what a lot of people missed, and what has been, and this I think is a very common theme, especially happening right now, is that most people that I think if you find gravitate towards the right side of politics are very prone to conspiracy theories. I mean, there's tons of scientific evidence that backs this up as well. And so what you have is a lot of these people take things literally rather than figuratively. Right. So it's like, especially when you look at Christianity and the way they view the Bible, like anointing someone like as despicable and anti-Christ like as Donald Trump as the, you know, the savior, and then justifying all of his actions through these weird Bible verses and stuff like that is just, you know, batshit crazy. And so all these theories are just like, you know, like John Carpenter's original film was just a metaphor for terrible people destroying the planet. And he gave them credence as to why they're destroying the planet. But really, it was just to call out, hey, you're spending too much time being, consuming crap that brainwashes you into thinking that you need to buy, thinking that you need to obey, blah, blah, blah. And like, we are in the midst of the, I would say like probably the worst, spray painting of the third eye in the history of humankind, because Think about the barrage of ads and lies. We're, every time we open up a social network, it's either the people that you follow. Yeah, it's everywhere. The people that you follow are sharing lies, or you being bombarded by algorithms that like bring you into this like filter bubble of all sorts of crazy stuff. Like, again, QAnon, who I was talking about earlier, I had been working on a project that's a little bit, it's not really top secret, but it's definitely like a, I've gone down the rabbit hole of insanity over the last like month and a half or so, kind of like researching QAnon, because I have a lot of experience creating alternate reality games, ARGs, things like that. So I know how these things are done. And so a group of friends and I who have done this professionally together got together and said, let's try to jack this game and see what we can do. And then we went deep and we realized, number one, there's only a small part that's a game. And then number two, the rest is really deep, crazy, like just crazy conspiracy nuttiness that like takes you down several rabbit holes and has like real roots to all these different like factions of weird, like occult Christian stuff. It's really bizarre. I mean, there's like, on one hand, I'm talking about like, all these crazy conspiracy theories. And then on the other hand, I just kind of found some of my own that I do believe might have some credence, but they're all, basically it's a lot of disinformation. Like what people are being fed is what Steve Bannon calls shit. Throw shit at people is what he says. If you throw shit at people, you confuse them and they don't know what's truth and what's false. One of the things I have always squashed as soon as it kind of would be brought up because of my art, like I can't stand when people say, they live as a documentary. They think that quoting the brilliant Roddy Piper, who, boy, what a deep thinker he was. When people say that, and then they kind of come off and like actually think that I believe in all these things, it just, I try to squash it as soon as possible, because it's crazy. And I think you were onto something very, I think, poignant there. The division and the distraction is the ultimate goal of who is running QAnon. And it's morphed over the years. There's a lot of, I can't get into the specifics because I've actually been working with some folks that are working with some news outlets that are actually working on big stories. So this little think tank group that I had started with and then ended up growing into, we were working with reporters all over the country in pooling our information together to figure out kind of not as much who is behind it, but what the motive is. And so what we found is there is actually, and this will all kind of be coming out in the wash over the next 3 months. I think QAnon is going to get really exposed for what it is. But basically, in a nutshell, the goal of QAnon is to confuse, distract, and divide. And that's exactly what it's doing. But how it's doing it is the part that scares me the most, because it's using techniques that are, brainwashing techniques. It's the way that it distributes information and the network of fake accounts that it has all over the internet that pop up and pop out. And then also the way that it distributes that info are very sinister. And it can only be, I think if you look at, you take that 10-foot step back, it can only be that, QAnon is again funded by interests that want America divided and want Americans to, in fact, engage in some sort of civil war for Athene, right? So it's like, if we can, if we kill each other, we're, you know, it's the perfect opportunity to step in and control us. And I believe, you know, I can't say 100% for sure who these interests are, but you can obviously infer yourself, you know, companies like OAN, the new, you know, the news network that's basically like the, you know, kind of like the QAnon mouthpiece. Look who they're funded by and the and who they're affiliated with, and that'll tell you which countries are, you know, want to pull our strings. And we know anyway. The reckoning that we're facing right now, is my biggest fear is, after really, like I said, studying and really going down the rabbit hole of QAnon, and then looking at it as a game, and then and thinking it's a game, and then completely finding out that it's not as much a game as it is, it's really brainwashing. And that's the big problem that we're going to have after, is no matter what they've done, is they set it up in such a way that even when QAnon is eventually exposed for the garbage that it is, it will, what they've done so far is reinforced in their believers that it's real, and that even though it's been discredited, it's still credible. And so in a way, in the same way people are indoctrinated into a cult, they believe that a guy like David Koresh or Charles Manson is the savior. It takes a while to deprogram people. And so that's what we're going to have to deal with, the reckoning of what happens after QAnon. And I mean, and it's a pretty scary concept, especially the fact that what I'm worried about most is on election day, what if some of these QAnon supporters decide to go shoot up, like, you know, especially, you know, obviously like inner city liberal voting areas, and then nobody goes to vote and things like that. Like there could, you know, I've seen there's a lot of like there's people that just share the QAnon stuff and they get in on the surface. And then there's the deep, dark people that really want chaos and want the world to burn and want people to die. And that's sick. And it's really, really sick. And it, to think that Americans would want to just kill other Americans just because they don't believe the same political or religious things that they do is just fucked up. Like, how did we get here? And what QAnon does is through brainwashing promotes that division and hatred, and it's really, really sick. And so the sickness that we're going to deal with afterwards is going to be, it could be pretty gruesome. I just hope for a better future. And that's what I, you know, what I've been working on a little bit over, well, I would say a lot over the course of lockdown. I mean, I've still worked on, you know, managed to release a few of the consume pieces, but I've slowed down on that a little bit. And I'm working towards, you know, I would say a new narrative. And that's kind of where, you know, where I'm excited to go, because I feel like what we've been fed over, especially hardcore, you know, our generations over the last like 20 to 30 years has been a real heavy dose of dystopia, right? Like think about every film, everything was like cyberpunk is cool, but it's dystopian as hell. And you're just a cog in the system. And so our brain has been trained so long to believe that I think what humans really need right now, and I actually wrote this down last night in my sketchbook. And so I really felt that it was, you know, something that needed to be said. But basically my thought is this: humans greatly need new narratives that advance beyond the apocalypse as the final destination and like, you know, of our story on planet Earth. So like, because, you know, everything's about like, we're living in this dystopian future, blah, blah, blah. And now we're really living in it, right? I mean, it doesn't get more dystopian.
It's the present.
Exactly. Yeah. So science fiction has always led the way for new ideas, right? Whether it's like, you know, the thinking of Arthur C. Clarke, or you know, all these different you know, the drawings of Sid Mead, or things like that. Like sci-fi leads the future, like, you know, the Ray Bradburys and the you know, the Rod Serlings, all those brilliant sci-fi minds always, you know, had led the future. So I believe right now what could help us kind of get through, not just get through COVID, but also I think get through all the things we were just talking about in terms of division and hatred and believing all this stuff, I think our new narratives. And that's because that's what our society has right now. Our society is built in this dystopian narrative where we wake up every day and it's kind of in a way like 1984. There's that part in the beginning of every person's day who's living in Oceania. They get up and they give 2 minutes of hate and they scream and they yell and everything.
Oh, well, man, right? Not far off.
It's not. Because like, if you think about it, anybody that you know, goes on to Twitter, bam, what are you engulfed in? It doesn't matter if you want Trump in your bubble or not, it's coming in. Somebody's retweeted something, somebody or whatever, you're going to get Trump in your feed. And so it's like, when you go down that rabbit hole, then you see his hatred of tweets and then you get into it, right? You can say, fuck you or blah, blah, blah. It just sets off your day. And so
yeah,
these, you know, these social media sites really know how to control your moods through algorithms. And so it's a very, you know, it's a very kind of, We're in a dark place with where social media is. And so I think we need to reclaim it. And that, like I was saying, it's all about new narratives.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something I really was interested in asking you about. You know, your work, rightly so, has this really scathing criticism of yep. the current political climate and consumerism, yep. materialism, celebrity worship, and all things that I'm personally aligned with. And I love and get kind of like a kick out of your work because it's just like
Thank
it's
you.
So potent.
Thank
But I'm curious, because you're talking about the way in which, you know, when we engage with social media like Twitter or, you know, Facebook or whatever, there's this tendency towards sort of absorbing these intense negative emotions with respect to Trump or all the
yes.
you know, whatever various crises we have. Where do you see the boundary between, you know, commentary that benefits society through your art versus empowering the people that you're commenting on and actually adding more fuel to the fire?
Well, I think I've crossed the line. I think I've kind of, like, I knew I was in trouble when I made the Hillary Clinton They Live and all of a sudden it became you know, a piece on InfoWars, right? And so Alex Jones was using it until I, you know, sent him a cease and desist. So. So, it's, I believe that it went from a joke to very serious. And then it also, I feel like I've crossed the line and I'm, in a way, I'm kind of burnt out on it. I feel like when I say a new narrative, I mean killing my narrative too. And
wow.
so, yeah, I know. And so it'll probably be something I always do here and there, but like, I feel like as much as it was a joke at first, it then again, like you were saying, it became more serious. And I do feel like it plays a little bit into the hatred. In 2015 and 16 and probably 17-ish, I think it was fun, right? It was fun in games. And then as we delve deeper into the Trump presidency and the world, you know, continuously got darker and more fascist friendly, I think it then crossed the boundaries of being commentary and more just hate fodder. And so that's why I tried to do less politicians and have more fun with, like, you know, Baby Yoda and things like that. And some of my color schemes became a little bit more playful and stuff. And I feel like, for the most part now, it's a like, in all honesty, I can't even draw Donald Trump anymore. Like I haven't actually drawn him since 2018. I haven't drawn a new thing of him since 2018. And so I feel like it's kind of crossed the line. And I just, to me, consume it like, and I, even though I love it and it's, you know, it's really, I think it served its purpose. To me, I feel like it's exhausting. And I don't necessarily enjoy it anymore, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, it's really fascinating to get your perspective on this because, you know, we see your work online and a lot of it, you know, it's, I don't know what percent, you know, 70% of it is consume, a lot of it very like Trump hate, like feeding into that, like, let's hate on Trump, which there is an aspect and element of it that is important that I do resonate with, of, you know, calling people out and holding people responsible. But at the same time, there's like, it gets to a point where it seems to be counterintuitively feeding the thing that you actually don't want, where it's like, when we're so anti this, anti that, and where we don't, when we're talking about what we don't want, when we're showing people what we don't like, it's actually empowering people like Trump and empowering that fascist narrative that we don't want.
Yep.
And this
you,
is what
you nailed it.
What I find so interesting about the direction that you're going in now with this solar punk artwork and story world, which I'd love for you to describe and get into, of actually really learning from your experience doing the Consume series and creating art of the, that is depicting a vision of the world that is more protopian and showing people a future that is inspiring and exciting. So we'd love to understand your shift into what you're up to now.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you for encapsulating that in the way that you did, because that's exactly like you nailed it. You nailed it. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. Like basically, and I think it kind of goes, I mean, you can apply a number of different things to it, but in a way it's like, you know, the law of attraction, right? It's like, whatever you speak about, whatever you focus on, you get that, you get more of it. Right. And so what had kind of happened is like right around like 2018-ish, 2009, I would say like the end of 2018, I had had enough of the death threats. I had had enough of MAGA. I had had enough of all that shit. And I just was like, I'm done. I'm done with this. Like I'm really done drawing all this crap. Right. And so it kind of staggered where if you see, like, I had a monstrous output from 2015 to 2018 with Consume, where I was literally doing a new one every week. And then I kind of got into, like, I was exploring a little more. I was focusing more on some other things that weren't as deep and dark. And I just, you know, at that point, I'd realized that Consume had consumed me. And I had become become the victim of the exact thing that I was mocking and fighting against. So you nailed it. Like, you absolutely nailed it. And so
that's powerful.
So with that... So at that point in time, I realized that I wanted a better future. And I had this thing I was working on. Remember that crazy event that I threw?
So 2014, 15.
Yeah. So that was a part of this thing that I'm actually doing right now, the solar punk thing. It'll all kind of come out. But like basically what I wanted to do is I was trying to create this like this kind of futuristic world with an alternate reality game to the past and blah, blah, blah. And so I actually did that. And then at the end of 2014, I ended up selling that a portion of it to Google. And so to make an alternate reality game out of themselves. So this project that I'm working on has evolved. It started in 2014 and actually has evolved beyond that. I had to stop and reconfigure everything because I sold a major piece of it to Google. So what that did, that allowed me to step back Consume came into the picture and this project went kind of on the back burner. And then I, all the stuff that I learned from Consume and felt through Consume and like, you know, and experienced as an artist and as a human and as a father and as a, you know, as like a, you know, just a citizen of the United States. I then took it and found that there's another way of thinking called solar punk, which really aligned with my very deep views of the future. And I just was like, well, if I've always wanted this, why the fuck am I wasting so much time with this? Right. Mm. So I then started to realize, okay, there's this world that I've got that is solar punk that I didn't realize was solar punk. So I spent some time trying to reconfigure it and, you know, figure it out and really just kind of like, you know, take it to the next level. And I put a good pitch book together and I was shopping it around to Hollywood and stuff like that. And a lot of them didn't know what to make of it, right? Because it was like, it was a little weird. It involved like a lot of weird digital stuff. It was a multimedia project. It had like some elements of cyberpunk, but they weren't sure about this new kind of solar punk thing. Was it just a fad? Would it be, you know, mocked like steampunk and stuff like that? And so it was the perfect time for COVID to hit and then me to say, I'm going to do this myself, just like I did all the other things that were successful. Whenever I kind of get involved with a bigger studio or whatever, usually they ruin what I do. So my goal was literally to just take this kind of narrative and shape it myself, build a fan base around it, get involved in real solar punk thinking and the real solar punk community and learn from that. And then make an authentic, honest, like piece of content. Just as Consume started off honest and authentic, it then, you know, again, I wanted to focus more on positive things. Like I wanted to write about and draw a future where people of color and all like, you know, all people are together and we're pushing for it together and race and all these things like gender and all this crap, you know, won't matter. And so I was thinking, how do I get there? Right. What is the way to get there? And I realized that it's almost like in when you're writing, one of the great pieces of advice you'll always get is kill your darlings, right? Kill your, don't be afraid to kill your babies. And so I realized that I had to kill something that I loved. And so for me, the rise of solar punk needs to come from the death of cyberpunk. So for me, I'm a fucking cyberpunk, right? Like I've always been like, ever since I got into cyberpunk as a kid, I was like, this is me. I love this shit, right? I'm a techno artist. I'm blah, 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 fighting the system, blah, blah, blah. I love it. And I just realized in cyberpunk, you're just a cog in the wheel. There's no, the outcome is always dystopia. There's no utopia. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted a sustainable future where community really was important and sustainability was important and climate change was not a myth, but it was something that we were all focused on rather than, you know, wondering about if, you know, who's a reptilian drinking the blood of children. We're focused on, hey, how can I make my life more sustainable, right? What can I do? And then I found these beautiful techniques like vertical farming and all this wonderful stuff that was really all now being focused into the solar punk genre. And I just dove in. And so I'm an admin of the Facebook solar punk group and we're about to hit 10K. We've grown like,
nice.
We've like tripled in size since the beginning of the pandemic. And it's all because we're doing, you know, we're thinking positively. And so that's where I'm going with this, into this real positive realm of thinking where you, in a way, my story as a metaphor is really the death of cyberpunk is the birth of solar punk. That's what this first part that I'm going to be releasing is all about. It's basically all about this kind of this world in chaos. And it's a very cyberpunk world where transhumanism and all these like kind of like fascist thinking, you know, is kind of coming to a head. And so it's all about how we, you know, how we destroy that with compassion and empathy and sustainability and all working towards a better future to repair the damage that we've done and just acknowledge the damage that we've done to the earth. Like, that's the biggest problem. Like, all of our politicians are in fucking denial about what we're doing, not just what we've done, but what we're doing right now to the earth and how we're raping its natural resources and destroying the, you know, everything from the air to the oceans to the water that we drink. And eventually, if we don't have a reckoning with what we're doing, we're gonna die. Like every other major society has died from, you know, the same kind of like, you know, machinations. And so like ours is just, you know, in a different futuristic plane of climate change and disaster, because we cared more about like, you know, stupid things that don't matter than the actual, like, you know, than littering and destroying our oceans that we get life from and drinking the water that gives us life. It's just, it's maddening to think that, you know, a 16-year-old girl like Greta, who comes out and speaks against this, is villainized by a whole faction of our country's political parties. Like, and so rather than be, you know, mock her, I'm inspired by her. Like a 16-year-old girl stepping up to the world and saying, "You guys suck. Like, get it together or you're going to kill us all. Don't you care about us?" And so to me, I think the future is about, we have to just start bringing new narratives into the world that aren't about the apocalypse and end times and the rapture and, you know, God coming back and all this bullshit that's just used to control people, and focus on reality. And that reality is, we've poisoned the air, we've poisoned the land, and we've poisoned the seas. And unless we figure out a way to reverse that shit, we're in trouble. And our children are going to suffer, and their children are going to suffer. And eventually it's not sustainable, and this world will die. And wow. So what I want to do is, I want to spend the last years of my life writing, creating, and making things that build towards that positive future that I want and want to manifest, and hope that, you know, just I can inspire one person the same way Ray Bradbury inspired me, or I can inspire one person the way, you know, Rod Serling inspired me, or you know, or Aldous Huxley. Like, I really want to just inspire people in a different way now, and move beyond kind of like the move. I've already said what I've had to say, right? Now I have to put my money where my mouth is and focus on making that change. Just like you were saying, right? It's like, you can make the comments and bitch all you want, but then you're just bitching into the void, right? And so I don't want to be bitching into the void anymore. I'm putting my money where my mouth is, and I want to make content that's all about like good change and positive change. And so the next pieces of art that will be coming from me will be it's basically, in a nutshell, the first piece is an interactive story that is part comic book, part novel, part animation, and part live action video and photography. I'm going to be using all these different mediums to explore this world that will, you know, once my goal is to actually build games and animation, like real full on and animated series and things from it. So to bring light to not only the solar punk genre, but also focus on new narratives that we can believe in, and show that empathy is always going to prevail over hatred. And I think that's because where we're in right now, we're here because we steered ourselves here, and I steered us here too. Like, wow. I'm as much to blame for this fucking negative cloud as anyone. So for me, I think the flipping the switch is imperative in the growth of an artist. You know, like, if you look at, you know, like Pablo Picasso and all these other, you know, and any artist that's had any success, they, even though people love what they do, they always evolve from that and go to a different period, right? So Picasso had his blue period and his gray period and all those periods where you focus on one thing, you churn a bunch of stuff out, and then you move on. because for an artist, and I think any creator, I think writers are the same, right? It's like, you know, Stephen King looks at his books from the past and is like, wow, that's shit. I don't even want to think that way anymore, right? And I think it's the same thing as for an artist, where it's like it's almost like you have to mulch your skin and get this like thinking out. And then once that thinking's out there, it's that you then move on to the next phase of thinking. And then once that thinking's gone, you move on to the next phase. And so, you know, as I think as any creator, I'm moving on to that next phase and really kind of taking the bull by the horns, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, it's really these stages of development, right, that are present within you, within us, and within society at large. Yeah. And I acknowledge you for taking responsibility for, in a way, I mean, contributing to that cloud of negativity, which was actually important stage of your evolution and of society's evolution, of being like, whoa, this stuff is here. It's present. It's not okay. It's still going on, but we need to show it. We need to comment on it in order to bring it up into the light, to become aware of it, right? Because we cannot change what we're not aware of. Right. And I really resonate so much. You know, I get lit up with everything that you're talking about, because it mirrors a lot of my own transition in my thinking and my values and what is so important to me, you know, growing up in this really transhumanist headspace, being very obsessed with technology and enjoying the cyberpunk aesthetic as well. Yep. And then recognizing the larger context within which all of that stuff sits, and seeing what's going on with the earth and what we're doing to it, the way that we're poisoning, you know, to your point, the earth and the land, the air and the water, our food, our minds, with all the ads and the craziness, the billboards and social media, and a lot of what you're painting in your art. And this is that transition from cyberpunk into solarpunk is very much really what this podcast is about, with this concept of a life economy and promoting the conversations and the ideas, the philosophies around, and really asking the questions of, what is the future that we really want to have? What is the future that we want to create? Earlier, you mentioned this relationship between science fiction and reality, and the way in which our imagination, through our art, through our culture, does not only predicts the future, as is the case, you know, with the iPad and the smartphone and video conferencing and a number of amazing technologies that we have, but it really creates the future. You know, what we focus on, we end up fixating our minds on and bringing out into this 3D reality. And so it's the narratives that exist in our comic books, in our media, in our movies, in our TV shows. It's the narratives that are so important, and we kind of take that for granted, or we don't really, it kind of operates on the subconscious level where we're not totally aware of it, but it absolutely is influencing how we think, how we feel, and what we deem to be important. And that's why solarpunk is important. That's we need to be creating these positive visions of the future that it is kind of bizarrely so lacking in our culture. You're totally right. You know, most of what we see on Netflix or in our movies are like these are like crazy, you know, these worlds that are kind of fun in a way, like they're interesting, but they're also more often than not very dark. So thank you for working on this. And I guess to provide our listeners and viewers a little bit more context, you know, for folks that are aware of cyberpunk and aware of steampunk, what are the core differences philosophically between those ideas, those movements, and solarpunk? Because I have a feeling most people have never really heard this term before.
Right. And I think like when you first hear the word solarpunk, you immediately think of the sun. And yes, while the sun is a part of it, it's not all of it. Like solarpunk, it really, to me, is a foundational, it has like foundational principles. And to me, the most important are community, sustainability, and inclusion, right? And so if you break it down into those three things, it's all about we're focused on community. We're not focused on division. We're not focused on finding, you know, the, you know, the, you know, a fake pedophile ring that doesn't exist, right? We're not focused on that shit. We're focused on the community aspect of life, where it's like, we're helping each other. You know, I'm growing food. I'm sharing that food with you. I'm doing this. I'm sharing that with you. It's all about community and being kind to each other. It's like, it's like just helping each other instead of hurting each other. And I think what's happened is we've become so defense minded that all we want to do is hurt and fight back. Mm-hmm. That we've lost that very human concept of community in a way that makes impacts anymore. And so Solarpunk is all about community, like building community with other people and doing things for the good of the community. And what that leads you to is sustainability. And so sustainability can mean a lot of things, but mostly it means sustainable technology that it does not rely on fossil fuels. Because if you think about the demise of the planet Earth, it's all built around fossil fuels and the mining of fossil fuels, and also the creation of substances that cannot be broken down or are not sustainable over a long period of time, from styrofoam to plastic to nuclear waste to chemicals to whatever, right? Like, you can't, even though there's definitely some credence to having well-controlled nuclear powered pieces in the future of Solarpunk, there's definitely a place for it. Sustainability is the key. And then inclusion. And inclusion all goes back to community, where we stop focusing on the bullshit of skin color and worrying about which person is calling themselves this gender and how I feel about that person calling themselves something that I don't agree with, which is ridiculous because people should be allowed to do whatever they want. And that shouldn't impact you because it's not your life. So instead of look at it as, she's trans, she's not a she, she's a he, blah, 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 all this negative crap that's just, you know, basically hatred filled political crap. Like, we don't worry about that anymore. Our future is all about, like, people are who they want, and you accept them for who they are, and it's all for the better good of society. You don't need to worry about that stuff. And so, to me, if we can focus on those three things as a society that, you know, embody what Solarpunk is all about, then we could just do so much better. Like, we would be so much happier. We would get so much more done. And I think it's very hard to imagine this now because of the cloud of negativity that we've had sprinkled over us. And it's not just from our country, it's from every country. And it's like the world is in a cloud of negativity because what's happened is all of the complaining, all of the hatred, all of the negativity that we've all found in all this stuff has manifested itself into Donald Trump and the right wing and QAnon and OAN and Fox News and even CNN and MSNBC. It's all there, and it's all this bubble of negativity that's ready to tell you exactly what's wrong with the world and take that, you know, your third eye that allows you to think beyond and fucking spray paint it shut, you know?
Right. I totally agree with that. And it's also important to recognize that it's not just out there, but it also exists within us, right? The darkness as well, in our own mind, in our own emotions. And there's that interplay, the relationship between the media that we see on our screens and then the way that it influences us. And just one comment, you know, first of all, I love those three values, totally aligned with them. I think, you know, sustainability is important, but then there's also this concept of the regenerative paradigm, which I tend to prefer because, you know, we have this idea of like sustainability. Well, like, are we really just, is our goal really just to sustain the state that we have now? Or is it more to live in a way where we're actually putting out more than what we're taking? And I think for me, that word is a little bit more potent, or kind of what we might want to be driving towards, than just sustaining or keeping things at this like base level, which is important to compared to where we are now, which is where we're taking more than what we're giving. But I think it's like, there's like where we are now, then there's sustainability, and then there's regenerative. And that's sort of the hierarchy of like where I see, see that.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because my solarpunk series is all about the regenerative. And so basically the concept is it's basically about this plant-based technology that becomes sentient through the touch of a girl who can communicate with plants.
So
she has the ability to kind of like feel the energy from plants. And so she touches
rad.
Yeah, thank you. And so it's like, and so it's about her kind of gaining control of this AI before a cyberpunkish kind of like transhumanist cult modifies it to destroy the world and bring forth a rapture that then they will create in their own image and instead use this technology to repair the earth, repair the land, repair the skies. Yes.
So let's bring some of these images up on screen. We have a few solarpunk images that you've created. Who are we looking at now?
So this is so you're going to love this, I think, because I was talking about consume, and I was mentioning I want to flip the narrative on it. So what I've done is I've gotten very meta into this. And so she's a fashion designer, this girl. And what she does is she creates technology that is embedded into our clothes that people wear that basically stop people from taking images of us, videos of us, and any image recognition technology being used on us by marketing drones, which I have in the future. Like basically, like it's like imagine drones flying over a city, and all they're doing is just looking for faces to target ads for. So basically what she does is she counteracts this with there's a whole group of them, and these are kind of like quote unquote the solar punk faction of the story that end up rising up at the end. And so she creates this fashion brand that is all about not being consumed by these, these machinations that are around us. And the brand is called Consume. So I've gone a little meta. So in a way I'm basically rebranding my own. And that right there, that image her name's Eva Gates, and she's the girl that can speak to plants. She's the one that can communicate with plants.
She's all in green. That's really neat.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
And that thing in the front. Oh, thank you. That thing in the front, she is a mask that she can put up on her face to protect herself.
Yeah, really fascinating. I love the way that you've considered how we can create, it's almost like anti-technology or like technology to combat other technology, and how that would be, imagining how that would be important in the future.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I mean, look, you guys are in the sense doing the same thing. I mean, like, and this is what I was kind of excited to talk with you about, Cosmo, is that when I first met you, you were very ingrained in the technology of VR and that's what you were doing. And now you've stepped back, and now you're focused on a very kind of like solar punk thinking too. So
absolutely.
So I think the moral of this whole story is we're both on the same, all three of us are on the same path. So we got to help each other, and let's make stuff together. Let's
absolutely
do some cool things.
And
right?
where can people learn more about your work and find out more?
So you can go to halhefner.com right now. I don't have much of the solar punk stuff up there right now because it's all being, it's going to unroll at one big time, but more stuff will be coming soon. And as it's developed, but like I said, I've created like 45 brand new pieces of art that are all related to this. And then I'm working on an actual story trailer right now. So when I have that done, I'll share it with you guys, and more stuff should be coming out. But I'm targeting like early 2021 for everything to launch.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really great. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how art and you're in this world that you're building evolves and how the movement evolves. And is there, you mentioned a Facebook group that people could potentially join to participate in. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. If you're interested in learning more about solar punk or just having more positive stuff come up in your feed, we're literally just called Solar Punk. We are the Solar Punk group on Facebook. So if you just go to Solar Punk, you'll see it, you'll see us, and you can, you know, and then just apply to the group and we'll let you in.
Okay. Well, we've had a number of technical difficulties on this episode, unfortunately, but thank you so much to Hal Hefner. That was a really fascinating conversation. There's a lot of interesting connections for sure between what this podcast is about and the whole solar punk brand and community. We'll be back in a few weeks on September 25th with Etienne de la Boutier. I unfortunately don't totally know how to pronounce his name, which I should probably figure out or ask him about. But it'll be a really interesting conversation about statism and the role that it is playing in our culture and the world. Really looking forward to that. And that'll be at 11:30 a.m. on our Facebook page. And if you're enjoying this podcast, definitely leave us a review on iTunes. Would really appreciate that. Or if you could share a link to this episode or the podcast at alifeeconomy.com, that would be great. Otherwise, have a wonderful week and we'll see you soon.